This is the World War II Radio Podcast.
A date which will live in infamy.
This is London.
We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
Go ahead, Berlin. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Welcome to the World War II Radio Podcast. The goal of this podcast is to present the original radio broadcast from 80 years ago during the days of the war, with the occasional more recent radio program about the war. Today we have an address from U.S. Vice President Henry Wallace on the role of free enterprise, delivered on March 17, 1944. Wallace served as FDR's Agriculture Secretary for his first two terms, then joined the presidential ticket in 1940. He served one term as vice president before being replaced by Senator Harry Truman for the 1944 election. At the time, many Democratic Party leaders were concerned that Wallace was too liberal, and they preferred the more moderate Truman. Wallace would go on to serve as Secretary of Commerce under first Roosevelt and then Truman, until a 1946 speech urging conciliatory policies toward the Soviet Union cost him that job as well. He ran as the nominee of the Progressive Party in the 1948 presidential election, and received 2.4% of the popular vote. He continued to be active in politics for the rest of his life. The World War II Radio Podcast is a Brick Pickle Media production. If you like the show, please leave feedback on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Be sure to visit our website at brickpicklemedia.com/podcast, where you can find links to past episodes and other information. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy today's episode of the World War II Radio Podcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When we think of America, we think of a fortunate country where a little man can get ahead through his own efforts. That is what Thomas Jefferson was talking about when he used the words life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Jefferson laid great emphasis upon agriculture, and feared the day when people would leave the farms and crowd together in great cities. We know now that special precautions must be taken if the growth of cities is not to produce the dire results Jefferson feared. The little man, whose strength is the vitality of the nation, must be preserved. When this war has been won, we want every man in America who has ambition and a willingness to work hard to have the opportunity to prove in a market free from unfair restraints that he has something to add to the productivity and happiness of this nation. Everyone has been able to contribute something during this war. On the Pacific coast last month, I visited several airplane plants where nearly half the workers were women, and where many of the men workers would not have been allowed to work 3 years ago because of physical handicaps. Nevertheless, these women, and the so-called rejects among the men, are turning out bombers with one-half the man-hours that so-called superior labor used 3 years ago. Truly the stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. I am mentioning this great accomplishment because I am firmly convinced that small business depends for its prosperity very largely on full employment and an expanding economy. Unless business, labor, and government plan together for full use of manpower, resources and skills, small businessmen will be ruined by the tens of thousands. The people of the United States are united in their determination to win this war. American industry, American business, and American agriculture can look forward to a bright future if the markets of peace are expanded to take the place of the markets of war. We cannot have free enterprise unless the world is at peace. We must maintain the peace. The Tehran Conference has laid the groundwork. All peace-loving nations will be given an opportunity to cooperate in rebuilding the shattered world and perfecting a permanent organization for peace. I believe in free enterprise. Free enterprise means free and open opportunities for all capitalists, workers, industrialists, and traders to produce the goods and services which are the only true basis of national wealth and well-being. Free enterprise means that each and every industry is open to new capital and new firms, that all firms have free access to raw materials, to labor, to technologies, that producers have free access to the markets in which they sell, that all individuals, in accordance with their several abilities, and irrespective of color, race, and creed, have equal opportunities to work at their chosen jobs. Free enterprise is not privileged enterprise. Monopolists define free enterprise falsely as freedom from government interference for monopolies. Free enterprise really means freedom for everyone, and not ruthless domination by a few. Free enterprise does not mean freedom for cartels to plot against the national interest. Free enterprise does not mean freedom for monopolies to exploit consumers while denying jobs to workers. Farmers, more than any other class of our people, love to produce to the limit. Therefore, they are gravely concerned when big industrialists reduce the foreign market for farm products by asking the Congress to raise tariffs on industrial products, while at the same time they reduce the domestic market for farm products by plowing workers out on the streets. The farmer wants, and has always wanted, an abundance of farm and industrial products, but it is suicide for him to stand for abundance all by himself. He tried that after the last war, and especially in 1930, 31, and 32. At that time, industry cut its production in half and reduced prices very little. The farmer did the reverse. He cut his prices in two, but reduced his production very little. All the farmer got out of trying to run an abundance show all by himself was bankruptcy. But he still believes in abundance, and he wants full markets provided by a reasonable tariff policy and full employment at good wages. Full employment, full production, good wages, and reasonable prices are the vital essentials of prosperity for the farmer, the worker, and the small businessman. The phenomenal success of American industry in producing for war has demonstrated convincingly that we can produce a national income of from $150 to $200 billion in the early post-war years, and that income can be progressively enlarged if we preserve a free and dynamic economy. Full use of our resources in all-out production for peace can create a level of well-being for the common man such as has heretofore been available only to a privileged minority. The common man knows this. He will never again calmly accept an economic organization which falls short of this goal. In our great wartime production effort, the strategy has been determined by the needs of the armed forces, and only the execution of the tactics has been left to the separate business units. Nevertheless, I am confident that equally amazing goals can be achieved in peacetime by free private enterprise if our business and labor leaders have sufficient faith in free enterprise to give their unqualified support to the full use of all our resources and to the measures necessary to enable free enterprise to serve the public interest. Business can discharge its public responsibilities and preserve itself only by maintaining conditions of genuine free enterprise. The price of survival and progress is a wholehearted acceptance of healthy, unrestrained competition, competition in price as well as in quality and service. Let us understand fully the implications of free enterprise, the duties which it imposes, and the opportunities which it opens. It is a fundamental of free enterprise that no individual or group shall control the market with power to exclude new investment, new enterprises, new methods, or workers. So far as small businesses are concerned, the mere absence of local capital markets is a restraint on their ability to grow and expand. The present high concentration of investment banking in New York City is in itself incompatible with free enterprise, for only the large national corporations have access on reasonable terms to that capital market. Restrictive agreements limiting capacity, curtailing output, fixing prices, assigning markets. All of these manifestations of the cartel at home or abroad must be forever abolished. The basic technologies of modern industry must be restored to and remain a part of the public domain. This is not an attack on the patent system. It is a necessary measure to make the patent system conform to its constitutional purpose, to promote the progress of science and the useful arts. It must become impossible to use patents to monopolize entire industries. The solution is simple. All patents should be subject to open licensing at a reasonable fee, one which affords a reasonable return to the inventor and promotes a wider and wider use of the patent. And no license should be permitted to stipulate how much the licensee shall produce, what he shall charge, or where he shall sell. The government's tax policies have an important influence on business activity. In a peacetime economy, the tax program should have a double objective: to bring in the necessary revenue and to encourage the production of the largest possible national income. Taxes which impair the ability of consumers to purchase the products of industry and agriculture, or which discourage the investment of venture capital in new undertakings, must be avoided in our drive for all-out production. The tax program can and should be framed with attention to the larger objectives of the economy: full use of all our resources. A public works program of all units of government should be planned far in advance, carried to the point of preparing blueprints and contracts, and then all postponable projects should be held in abeyance until the construction activity is needed to balance a prospective decline in business activity. Likewise, the government should seize the opportunity afforded by periods of business prosperity to accelerate its program of debt retirement and thereby improve its credit position and help control the credit inflation, which might otherwise lead to an early recession. Government fiscal policies can go far to reduce and to compensate for fluctuations in business activity. Above all, it is necessary for our leaders in industry, agriculture, and trade to understand the responsibilities of both business and government in assuring sustained full employment of all resources. Business policies must be framed with this long-run objective in view. Forward-looking businessmen will welcome the cooperation of government in maintaining full employment without sabotaging the national economy by treating such governmental activities as attacks upon free enterprise. In recent speeches, I have dealt with the necessity for developing balanced regional economies in the South and the West as a part of a full production national economy. The per capita income in the South and West must be raised to the point where adequate markets will exist for the output of farm and factory. All obstacles to such regional developments should be removed. In the building of our post-war national economy, particular attention must be given to the opportunities for small business enterprises. Small business provides an outlet for new ideas and products, a training ground for new leaders, and an effective competitive check on big business, which might otherwise confuse mere size with efficiency. The greatest contribution which government can make to the progress of small business is the creation and preservation of genuine free enterprise. Given access to the necessary technologies and to the capital markets, small enterprise in industry and trade will flourish. And such small business, by reason of its inherent resilience and flexibility, can become the mainstay of our regional economies, the balance wheel of the national economy. Competition must remain the indispensable foundation of free enterprise. Where competition exists, enterprise is free, and the necessity for governmental regulation of industry is at a minimum. Where competition is suppressed or restricted, technological progress is blocked, efficiency diminishes, markets contract, and the national income shrinks. The government must either aid in preserving healthy competitive conditions or assume increasing responsibility for the management of industry. We have an unparalleled opportunity to return to a free enterprise economy. The necessities of war have exposed domestic restraints and broken foreign cartel restraints. Improvements in technology have created new inter-industry competition, which threatens the power of entrenched monopolies. New light metals, and alloys will compel the aluminum and copper industries, and even the steel industry, to develop cheaper methods of production and seek new markets for their products. Some technical advances will enable small plants to operate economically in industries heretofore dominated by one or two big firms. The greatest opportunity lies in the war plants built with government funds. In the manner of their post-war use lies the acid test of whether we are sincere in our determination to reestablish genuine free enterprise. We must not regard such plants as liabilities to be disposed of hastily. We must not allow the disposition of these plants to add to the concentration of control in industries which already are monopolistic. The plants must be kept in full production to create the enlarged national income required to support a new American standard of living. As a final sale of these war plants would probably result in their being acquired sooner or later by a few large concerns, I have suggested that title should remain in a federal agency and that these plants should be leased to those independent producers who will create new competition and new production. Whether or not we have free enterprise and the full use of all productive resources depends on our understanding that our way of life is at stake and on the determination of all of us to test every private and public policy by whether it contributes to the full use of all our resources or whether it tends toward the destruction of full production. We shall win the military victory. We must have a peaceful world thereafter. We must preserve America as a land of economic opportunity for all of our people. This must be the century of the common man.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode of the World War II Radio Podcast. We hope these old-time radio programs entertain and help you learn more about what Americans experienced during the war 80 years ago. Be sure to visit brickpicklemedia.com/podcast for past episodes and more information